Hello, my name is Herb Smith. I am 52 years old. Today's date is Saturday, July 31st, 2021. I'm calling in from Rochester, New York. My conversation partner today is Joyelle Clance. She's a colleague. I've worked with her at WXXI, and I'm very happy to have her interview me.
Hello, I'm Joyelle Clance. My age is 40, and today's date is Saturday, July 31st, 2021. My location of where I'm calling in from is Rochester, New York. My conversation partner is Herb Smith, and my relationship to Herb is a colleague, peer, and becoming a friend. I've gotten to work with him through WXXI, public media station out of Rochester. Well, hello, Herb.
How are you doing, Joelle?
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to be a part of this incredible opportunity with StoryCorps.
It is my pleasure. It really is my pleasure.
You know, I want to dive in because this is an opportunity for me as well to get to know you more. You know, I've gotten to work with you in some unique settings, and it's been virtual. And so here we are, still virtual. I want to start with who is Herb Smith? You know, give me a little bit more about your background and how you got to Rochester.
Well, I play in the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. I am the third trumpet in the orchestra. I am the only Black musician in the orchestra.
Bravo.
And I am actually the first Black musician in the orchestra in the entire history of full-time musician in the entire history of the organization.
Wow. Thank you for being a pathfinder, you know, for paving the way for others.
I just read something that's like, you know, you want to be the first, but you don't want to be the last. You know, so
yeah.
It's like I am actually actively working so that I am not the last. And we can talk about that later.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get into that.
Yes, but so here I am, a kid, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Stop it.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. That's amazing.
That's amazing. I did not know that. Okay, cool.
When did you move to New York?
I moved to Rochester in 1987.
Wow.
And that was, again, playing trumpet and starting in fourth grade, 9-year-old kid, and made my way through different schools and everything until I came to Rochester to go to Eastman School of Music.
Eastman School of Music.
Yeah, I got a scholarship to go there. It was a scholarship for a Black trumpet player. It was through Wynton Marsalis and the Eastman School. And I'm here. I came here to go to school and never left.
Well, we're so grateful that you never left, first of all.
Yeah.
I ended up moving more upstate, but now that I live in Rochester, you know, I'm especially grateful that you haven't left because boy, are you talented, sir.
Thank you.
When you were on our home stage show at the Little Theater that WXXI owns, I just was blown away by your talent. I mean, you're just, what does it feel like? I mean, tell me about your instrument. Tell me more about your trumpet.
Well, you know, starting trumpet as a 9-year-old kid, you really don't know what you're doing. Like, it's just kind of like, okay, trombone is weird, tuba is huge, flute is too small, you know? Like, okay, I guess that trumpet seemed like the right one. I just kind of picked it. You know,
mm-hmm.
The sound of it, like the player played, my teacher played it. The sound of it sounded good to me, I guess, you know, and so I just, all right, let's try it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward to now, and I'm thinking about all the different places that the trumpet has taken me, you know, like, you know, in sixth grade, I had to make a choice between going to like a music school type thing or a math school type thing. So I went to the music school, you know, and in ninth grade, I had to pick between being on the basketball team or playing first trumpet in West Side Story. You know, it's like, because both of them had rehearsals, practices, and they're like, come on, Herb, you know.
Yeah, you got to pick one. So it's like, what journey are you going, left or are you going right? And then it's amazing, you know, like you look back, what if you had decided to play basketball?
Exactly. I think about that. I think about those little decisions in the moment. You're just like, oh, okay, trumpet feels right. I'll just go with that. And now, you know, because of the trumpet, I've been to Paris. I've been to Germany. I've been to Japan. You know, I've been to, you know, the Alps. I've been like all these different places because of trumpet. I mean, it's very much directly because of trumpet. And so it's really just been the soundtrack of my life, really. Like,
oh, I love that. The soundtrack of your life.
The trumpet just is just right there, you know, and it's been, you know, for me, it's been a real help for me to cope.
Yeah.
I'm down here in my office. I come down here and, you know, whatever's going on in the world or in my family or my daughter or whomever.
Yeah, it's your
the
place
trumpet to is here. It's my place. Like, I'm in
escape
here.
Escape room or your happy place too, right?
It is. Yeah, it's a happy place, but it's a workplace. It's just like, it's been my life since I was nine.
It's home.
Yes.
Right? It's home.
Yes.
You know, you said cope. You just got me thinking. That was just a great segue. As you know, the reason I got to get connected with you was because of the pandemic. And obviously, although we're still kind of in the mix of some things, it's been a very unique year and a half going into 2 years. You know, how has this affected you at the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra? You know, how has it affected you and your trio and how you're performing and all the pivoting that you must have done throughout the pandemic? Tell me about that.
Well, so following the trajectory of trumpet also takes me into conducting. So because I took conducting when I was in college, and being a musician in the orchestra, you get to be in front of many conductors. So I just really study conductors, just love to watch what they do, critique. Oh, I could do that better. Or, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. I'll take that, you know.
Yeah.
And so I've delved into the area, the arena of conducting with RPO. So I was scheduled to conduct a series of school concerts at Eastman Theater. It was a week-long thing. Those concerts were going to be the week of like March 8th, 9th in 2020.
Yeah.
Right? That was the week that everything just shut down.
Yeah.
And so we were going to have all of these students come into Eastman Theater. That's one of the things we do, bring the students in.
Oh, I love that.
And have them see a concert. That all shut down. So then RPO, we had to pivot.
Yeah.
And we did a stream. We did a live stream. And we had...
You were still conducting, but it was...
I was conducting, yes.
Okay, so you got to... You didn't cancel. Oh, I see. So you just all of a sudden said, all right, we're going to live stream this. And you still were able to reach the children, the kids?
Yes. Yes. We had... I don't know how many points of entry, they said like 500 points of entry or something like that with different schools. And for some of that, that's one person watching the screen. For some of those, it was like entire lunchrooms with a screen listening to the concert.
Wow.
And so we had to pivot and do that. So we decided to not bring the kids, all the kids in right to Ethan's.
So, well, so smart for first of all, and how great that you could all quickly, you know, collaborate and make that happen. And I wonder what it was like for, what the experience, what that was like for those kids, because this is like the first time that they were having something virtual, right? But how great, because music is one of the most, to me, maybe food, right? Music and food brings people together.
Yes, it does. It really does.
But music, it doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter your culture. It doesn't matter history. You know, music is, people love music. And yeah. I think that's wonderful that you still got to conduct. But of course, that probably had to be really still hard and bittersweet for you, huh? Not getting to do it live.
Yes. I mean, it was really bittersweet because, you know, here I am. I was slated to do like 4 concerts, you know, in front of all these kids. And then they decided to just change it to 1 concert at the end of the week. And we got all of our streaming thing together, and I conducted, and I had to get my script together and all that.
Yeah.
But I was the last concert that RPO played in Eastman Theater. They still have not played a concert in we still have not played a concert in Eastman Theater yet.
Wow.
That was the last concert, my conducting. So it was kind of this pivot that you have to make.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me as a conductor in RPO, I had the pivot. You know, as a musician in RPO, you know, many our concerts just came to a halt.
Yeah.
They really came to a halt. And we started doing some streams.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, they were trying to do just strings.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want, you know, trumpets blowing air and
right, no, no face to face. It was no singing. I know we were I was canceling things left and right, and that's what led me to co-producing Harpy Hour, which was the live Facebook show we did every Friday during the beginning of the pandemic, and that's how I was introduced to you. Through my host that we brought in from the RPO, it's incredible, this community that we have here, because we all were just coming together to try to support one another. Did you feel that? Did you feel that sense of community?
Yes, totally felt that sense. There was just, well, one of the things that really helped were like colleges. We're reaching out to musicians to do virtual master classes. And one of the things that is a trip when I'm sitting here talking to you on this wonderful mic that I'm talking into.
You sound amazing.
No, but it's like all of this stuff here that I'm looking at. I'm looking at this mic. I'm looking at my interface. I got another mic here. I got 2 different lighting things here. I bought a high def camera. Like all of this stuff just did not exist before the pandemic.
Right.
This is all part of the pivot
that
we had to make.
Yeah.
And so it really put me into a whole different realm.
Yeah.
I play in a brass quintet called the Gateways Brass Collective. And we had concerts scheduled in Baltimore. We had one scheduled in California. We had some in Atlanta. We had and more were on their way.
Wow.
And all that stuff just quit. So one of the things that we did do to pivot is do virtual recordings where I would send out a click track to the group, and it would just be tick 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 tick, right? And then they would have their music, and then they play their part, send it to me, and then I play my part, put it on top, you know,
edit it all together,
and then we put it all together, and it's this recording that sounds fantastic, but we're, you know, no one's near each other,
right?
And then you record a video, and then we put it all together. Like, I mean, there were so many of these that were going on during the pandemic,
yeah.
But it was a real pivot for me, because here now I'm a sound engineer now. Like, I'm like, okay, I don't know anything about this. Like, okay, I'm trying to put in reverbs and, you know, and adjust the clips and do all this stuff. And
I'm a whole different type of a tech check, right?
Yes. Yes. A whole different thing. But again, that's part of that pivot. That's part of that thing that COVID really forced us to do. And I'm telling you, I'm better off for it.
I agree with you. I mean, look at what we're getting to do right now. I mean, now StoryCorps initially was going to get to come to Rochester in person. And unfortunately, we couldn't allow that and for the safety. But that's okay, because that technology is allowing us to be together right now in this virtual booth, where we're, you know, still getting to share stories and represent this beautiful community. And, you know, go back to Gateways, because Gateways is such a big partner here with WXXI. Talk more to me about the virtual clinics and festivals, master classes you were talking about.
Yeah, so Gateways Music Festival is a festival of all Black musicians of the African diaspora, and they bring musicians from all over. Well, it was the country, but there's some people from outside of the country to form this orchestra of all Black musicians. It's fantastic. I mean, for me to be the only Black person in Rochester Philharmonic, and a lot of these players that are in this Gateways are the only or the one, two, and they're
representing their area.
Right. And then we all come together, and it is just a real sight to see. It's like, you know, something that I've never experienced besides being in this Gateways.
Yeah. And the first time I experienced it was virtually, because we're a media partner for this every year. And still being newer to the area, like this was new, happening to go virtual. I was blown away by the amount of programming and live concerts, conversations, different things that was available to the community. And I mean, especially during the time of Black Lives Matter and different things that Rochester has experienced in a rough way this past year, you know, that has to be so significant. And, you know, kudos to you, all of you and Gateways that do the performances and put that together, because it really is so impactful to this community.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, it's more than just playing music.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. Like, to be around your kin, people that look like you, which it's, you know, people are kind of like people that look like you. It really makes a difference.
Oh my gosh.
When you're there, you're playing, you're looking around, you know. And I was so happy that they were able to pivot again, that word.
I know, it's a strong word. I love it.
To make the festival virtual. And like the Brass Quintet, my Gateways Brass Collective, we were able to be a part of that virtual festival. There was a string group. There were all these different groups that sent in virtual things. Anthony McGill, who plays in New York City or Chicago, sends in their stuff to make this virtual festival possible. And it was really, really, really fantastic. And just throughout the pandemic, there were just many, like I did a masterclass at Potsdam. Eastman School of Music called me to do a masterclass there. I did a masterclass at some HBCUs. You know, I did like some classes at libraries that were doing virtual.
That's so good.
Classes. It's things like that where the city people were reaching out to try to keep something going, but it helped the musicians in the city to be able to, you know, keep food on your table.
I was just going to say, this is how you make your income, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, and it's so important to us here at WXXI. And you, that musicians do receive, they receive payment for their services, right? Like, that's important to us, and it's you're valued. And I'm so thankful that I work for an organization that allows us to pay musicians for their time and their talents.
Well, one of the things that helped out was Home Stage at the Little.
Yes.
Which was a fantastic event where my trio, the Freedom Trio, we were able to play at the stage at the Little, all connected with WXXI. And then we recorded it. It's this 30-minute show that, oh my goodness, it's so well produced, and it's just so great. And people, I send them the link, and they're like, oh wow, Herb, this is so great. You know, it was at a great time, because it really was a twofold thing for me. One, it was allowing me to have that musical expression that down here in my office I can't do on my own.
Right. You were on a stage again.
We were on a stage. The trio was socially distanced. There was no audience, but we still were able to play.
Yeah.
And then also, like, at that time, that was income.
Yes.
You know, coming in, which, like I say, as a musician, you know, it's like,
it's important.
I always say, like, when it rains, it pours. But when it's not raining, it's a drought sometimes. You know, it's a drought.
Well, you know, and events in general, and it's so, we're connected through events. That's my industry, as station engagement and events person here, that, you know, I was the same way. I had to go virtual, but that opened me up to work with national acts, national artists. I was connecting with people I had never remotely dreamed of getting to meet, that because they could come to this virtual space, we could now connect with each other. You know, and organizations don't always have the funding to fly in artists, national artists. They don't, you know, plus we're really big about supporting local artists. But this was a nice balance. You know, doing Harpy Hour with you, for example, was a mix of national and local. And that, even if it was for a few months, it was something to support the community and bring us together. And people like Eastman, who's celebrating, 100 years, right?
Yes.
Is it a centennial? Yeah. You know, we try the RPO, we try to just join together, Hochstein School of Music, you know, like all of these great, great, we're so lucky with that Rochester has just got a plethora of music and facilities that perform, right?
Yeah.
You said earlier, no audience. What was it like, you know, what did it feel like the first time you're on stage performing to no audience?
It was a trip, because inside, like especially with the trio, there is this, and with the trio, for me, it's my compositions that we're playing too. So they're just all just embedded in my heart, and different instances and occurrences are all in the music. So it's very charged with emotion. And when you play for an audience, it's like you're playing and you're giving your all, you know, you look up at the audience and you see somebody bobbing their head or something, or tapping their foot. And that's enough to kind of like, okay, someone's connecting with you. But with no audience, it's like you're doing that. You look up, okay, there's no one here. Okay.
Yeah.
You have to just kind of keep that going.
Yeah.
And then like you play this piece, you get through it, you get to the end, boom, it's over.
Nothing.
You know? and the thing about it, which was interesting, is like with the cameramen, it's like they're not going to be shaking or moving anything, because you want to keep the shot still, you know. So it's like,
you know, like
nothing.
Respectfully try to clap and cheer you on, right?
You know, or like kind of wave at you or something, or tap, you know,
some thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, but I can't imagine, because I get my energy from people, and that was really hard for me, being so isolated as somebody whose main job is engagement and events, and I'm in the community, like on in the field weekly, daily, right? All of a sudden to be so isolated, I can imagine a little bit of what that might, it feels like looking out at an empty audience, you know, and it's, but it has taught us a lot of things. You know, what do you feel, what were a couple lessons that you have taken so far out of the pandemic and out of this time, this past year, whether it's around Black Lives Matter or it's around being a musician and during the pandemic, you know, what were some lessons that you've learned?
Well, one of the lessons that I learned is just change. Change is good.
Change is good. I am with you.
Change is good. I mean, it doesn't necessarily feel good when it's happening. And you have to kind of, you know, find a get over the curve of it a bit. But if you can be aware that what you're feeling is an uncomfortableness brought on by change, then you can actually lead into the change, lead into the uncomfortable feeling, and it always comes out better. I mean, I actually had COVID.
Okay.
And I didn't have the, oh, no symptoms, COVID, 3 days and I'm good. No, I didn't have that COVID. I had the
They
thought I was going to die COVID. I was out of it. I was really out of it. And
did it scare you, Herb?
In like, it did not scare me because I was in it.
Yeah.
You know, I was in it. I was dealing with it. And one of the things that helped me was the trumpet. The trumpet helped me get through COVID because I figured, my sister told me to get a pulse oximeter. I think I have it right here. Yeah. A little pulse oximeter.
Okay. And what the heck is that?
And what that does is it tells you your oxygen level, oxygen level. Mm. And it should be like around 98 or 96 or higher, 98. And if it gets down to 90, but if it goes below 90, you should go to the hospital. And when it gets down to below 90, then basically you should get on a respirator, is what they're saying. My pulse ox would get to 90. It would get right down to 90.
And
I figured out that with my partner, she's an Ayurvedic doctor. We figured out that if I walked, if I got up and walked and kind of moved my lungs, and I would be coughing just crazily, and then after I would walk, I would like walk around the block or something, come back, check my pulse ox would go up. And then the other thing I figured out was trumpet. If I played the trumpet, you know, I would be coughing or whatever, I would just start playing my trumpet. That also brought my pulse ox up.
Wow.
You know,
so you just pushed through the coughing.
I pushed through that.
Wow.
And one of the things, like, again, change, like going through that change, I was able to, like, once I started healing, then I wrote this piece called Healing.
Oh.
And I kind of felt my, like, I couldn't write music because, like, everything in my inside of me was like, get healthy. Like, all of my, like, spirituality, thoughts, physical, emotional, everything, like, my whole body was like, we're trying to get you healthy. And then when I was able to sit down and write music, I thought, I'm healing now. I can feel it. I can feel I'm healing.
Wow.
And that piece that I wrote was played by RPO. It's going to be one of the pieces that I'm conducting the concert August 31st, and I'll be playing that piece in RPO called Healing. And in the middle of that piece, there's a Langston Hughes poem that I use called Go Slow.
Ah.
So So in the
midst, I'm going to be at that concert.
In the midst of all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
wait, there's more.
Good. Change is good. No, I mean,
change
is
good.
Change is good. Like, that's one of the things I really, 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 really learned.
What a really great attitude that you have to come out of that. And such an experience. You know, I knew several people. My father had COVID briefly for a while. It was just a scary week. It ended up being like a false positive situation.
Okay.
But you always, you know, I've always believed in living life to the fullest.
Yes.
Do you believe in that too?
100%. 100%. Like, live life to the fullest. And then the other thing is that there really aren't, I mean, when I say this, it seems weird, but like, there really aren't any boundaries. I mean, I know that there's, in this country, there are so many issues with Black and brown people, especially Black males, and being held back and being harmed and killed and all these different things.
Yeah, and you've been seeing that and feeling that right here in your own community this past year.
But there really is no boundaries. If you can get above that, you can kind of get into the spirituality of that. You know, there's no boundaries for us. And I mean, like, here, me, this kid from Cincinnati, Ohio, ends up conducting the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, doing Fanfare for the Common Man at a Black Lives Matter rally.
Wow.
You know, and that was, to me, that was so big for me, because the RPO has never really expressed any kind of, they play to their base. RPO plays to their base. RPO plays to their base, and their base is a certain type of people.
Right.
And that was one of the things that I'm like, no, the RPO is better if they play to all. And again, I said this to the CEO. I was just like, the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra is really the suburbs of Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra.
Right.
It's not the city of Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. And we need to do things that, you know, support
that demographic has to change, right?
Yes,
and change what that audience looks like. When you, as a conductor, even though sometimes your back is to the audience, when you play to that audience, you want to see a sea of color.
Yes, you do. You want your concerts to reflect the people.
Yeah.
Rochester is 30% Black. It's 30% Black, and our concerts do not reflect that. And that was part of like what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
Play for a Black Lives Matter rally, you know, and that, you know, really, it was good for the orchestra, but it was good for me, because one of my philosophies is, whatever you do, wherever you do it, find the inequalities there and help in whatever field you do.
Yes.
Like, I'm not a doctor, and I don't necessarily going to go and work at food kitchens and stuff like that, soup kitchens and stuff. That's not really what I do. I'm a musician. So how can I do what I do to help?
Right.
You know, and so that's.
So look within.
Right. Right.
And
so,
and in your area, your field, or whatever your passions are, or
exactly.
what you do, and see how you can apply that out there to create change, right?
Create change right where you are.
Yeah.
Right where you are. And then it doesn't feel self-serving.
Right.
You know, like, okay, I'm just going to go and, you know, and give out groceries to
like check it off the list, like, oh,
I did
my deed today, my good deed.
Right,
it's got to be bigger
no.
than that. It's bigger.
Yeah, it does. I mean, and so like one of the things that I've done is, being in the orchestra, I am on the orchestra committee, and the orchestra committee works through the union and through the management to make different changes in the orchestra. So I'm trying to work, you know, inside the orchestra to help. I was on a committee, you know, all these different things that I do musically to try to help.
When do you sleep? When are you sleeping?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know, because this is like, it is such a great change. But now, like, this hybrid of, because now we know we've raised the bar. Now we're like, we can do virtual, and now we're starting to get to do live concerts again, and we can record, and we can create things virtually and record just for content too, right? Like, right. There's just like, I get excited at the opportunities, right? And I kind of want to go back to something fun that I had heard about, but some concert in a field. Can you tell me what the heck is that about?
Okay, so during kind of the really major shutdowns of the pandemic, I was called to do this concert with my trio, and it was at my friend's barn. He has a barn, and he has this big field, and he does concerts in his barn, but they couldn't do concerts in the barn. So what he did was he set up this outdoor stage, and my trio set up, you know, and we had masks on and everything, and we were socially distant. But the audience drove up in cars, and they had the cars all lined up kind of different spots. You had a kind of a spot in between.
So like a outdoor movie would be like?
Yes, kind of, right, exactly. Kind of like a drive-in.
Drive-in.
And the cars just pulled up, and then some people would get out their cars and kind of set up in their pods, and some people just stayed in the cars. And then after we played a piece that they enjoy, big honk honk, people that honk their horns and stuff to say how much they appreciated it.
That's amazing.
That was such a great thing for us. Again, that was another one of those, like, again,
you're never gonna forget that moment.
Oh my God,
that is such a unique, like, I kind of have goosebumps, but I have like such a great visual. You painted such a great visual. I can just see it, and I really wish I was sitting in one of those cars and could be honking my horn at you.
It was really fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
So, you know what? So what is your words of wisdom, you know, coming as we're still coming through the other side of the pandemic, you know, as things are popping up in the news and we don't really know what's in front of us. You know, where are you taking yourself in the future? And, you know, what kind of words of wisdom do you have for those listening?
Well, I think an old friend of mine said, you know, about the word fear. And would mean false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. And I think fear stops us from doing so many different things. It keeps you in your lane. It makes you stay in your lane. And if you think that fear is false evidence appearing real, then when you're dealing with different races, when you're dealing with different, you know, ethnicities, when you're dealing with different sexual orientations, whatever it is, false evidence appearing real, that's the only reason why you would exclude from fear.
That's strong. I wrote that down.
Fear. And in the pandemic, so many people have so much fear about the pandemic.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, because there was so much death involved.
Yeah. You know?
And it's hard to not be fearful, but you can't let fear debilitate you.
Well said. Well said.
Move forward, because change is good.
That's right. Well, I am so grateful that you've stayed in Rochester. I hope you never leave us, but either way, I know how to get you virtually now.
It would take a lot to get me to move out of Rochester.
Well, we are so lucky to get to work with you. And I can't thank you enough for just sharing so much about yourself and with me, and with and also how much you give to this community and how much you're doing to pave the way for the generations behind us, and those right now in this community, and getting them to kind of look at themselves and think about change. I know you've left me with some really heartful thoughts, and I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to be a part of this. And Joelle, thank you so much. It's just been really great working with you, and you made this experience just completely enjoyable.
Yay. Ditto.